Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Live from Langdon Farms Golf Club, this is a special edition of Dirt and Spray.
Here's to the finely tuned athlete on the verge of greatness.
Cooney Lexus of Portland presents the 7th Annual Fan Golf Classic. Brought to you by Pelican Brewing, Stark Street Lawn and Garden, by Washman Car Wash, Rebel Yell Bourbon, Biggs Chicken, by Encore Audio Video, Warren Allen Attorneys at Law, United Cerebral Palsy of Oregon, by Vacasa, The Children's Course, 808, Baseballism, by Pearl Vodka, 1-800-DIVORCE, Discount Windows, Laurelhurst Market, and by Big Fat Wieners. Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Let's go while we're young.
The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson. We're hanging out at Langdon Farms for the 6th Annual Fan Golf Classic.
Is this really only the 6th annual? I feel like we've done 10 of these by now.
When you were gone, I was like, dude, I think we've had 18. And so I was like, no, no, no.
No, no.
No, no, Sprager.
No, 5th, 7th. This is the 7th annual fan. Look at that. The listeners
know
more
than
we do.
I think it's the 6th.
No, 7th. 7th annual. Will, yeah.
Is it 7?
Number 7.
It is. This is 7?
Look at us, off to a good start.
God, it's like when my kid turned 7. I was like, oh, you're 6. This is cute. And she's like, Dad, I'm 7.
Maybe it's like the 6¾ Fan Golf Classic or something.
Sure. Maybe it's one of those Harry Potter situations.
Yeah, no, it's just fun, man. It's great being out here every year. And I'm a little chilly, to be honest with you. Like, we're in the shade.
Dude, this is perfect.
I know, but what's wrong with you? Like, we've had years in the past, though, where it's been like 104, 105 degrees, and you thought half the people playing were going to die by the fourth hole.
For sure.
Now I think the only person that's going to die today is the guy that is claiming, apparently, that he's going to drink a beer a hole for 18 holes.
Yeah, let's talk about that strategy, shall we? We were told via Dusty or Will, or maybe it was Rick. I can't remember. One of these fine gentlemen out here. Whereas telling us before we crack the mics, there is a listener that says he's going to drink one beer for every hole.
A beer a hole for 18 holes.
That's impossible, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, but
it should be. You could do it, sure. But how many times are you trying to make way in the stomach?
Right, right. It's not. We all know how that movie ends, and it's not well. It's just a question of how many holes will it take to get to that point. Because I think I could probably make it.
I was going to ask you, how many do you think you get in where, honestly, you're like, whether you're hammered or not, you're just, no, no more, no more.
Probably the 12th hole.
Wow.
I think I could
make
it.
That's impressive.
I think I could make it to the 12th hole without barfing or keeling over.
Yeah.
Now, my golf game would probably go on the 6th hole. If you give me 6, well, again, though, it depends.
Well, you could have 6 and still be great.
It depends on what kind of beer you're drinking, too, because, again, not all beers are created equal. Our friends at Pelican are over on the 10th hole. If you give me 4 Pelicans.
You go 4 double beak breakers.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see you later, golf game. But you give me something lighter, maybe. Maybe I can hang in there for 6 or 7 holes. I think I can make it to 12 before I completely fell apart.
What if you mixed them? Like a Coors, an IPA. A Coors, an IPA. A Coors, an IPA. Then are we still talking 12?
A little bit longer. That extends it a little bit.
I got to admit, I commend you on this. In the way that you admit that you suck at chugging a beer, I will go that way with how many I could probably consume. I couldn't do 12.
You're more of a sprinter than a marathon runner.
Yeah, like, I can't hold that much. So, like, the idea even more than, like, 7 to 8 beers is, like, it makes me feel full now thinking about it.
You don't have much man mass to you.
No.
Like, you got nowhere to store an actual beer there.
Right, so it's probably going to have to come up or come out, whatever way it's going.
Right, you're
going to
be peeing every other shot. It's not going to be a pretty picture.
Usually when I start drinking, that's what happens anyway.
Yeah.
It's always, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. Didn't you go 10 minutes ago? Yeah.
No, I totally did. Because I'm that way. Once I start drinking, no matter what I'm drinking, but once I start, like on mornings that I have a really tough workout and I'll pound like two hydro flasks of water, I am peeing every commercial break for the first 2 hours of the show.
Oh, man.
It's that bad. So, yeah, you give me a beer a hole, I'm whizzing after every other shot.
Dude, I had some pretty big news I had to tell you from the weekend.
Okay, what do you got? Did you watch the Walendas last night?
The what?
The Walendas? No, you didn't watch that last night. You didn't get roped into that nonsense.
What is that?
I got suckered into it.
What is the Walendas?
It was the high rise.
Is it a sporting event?
The high rise walk over Manhattan. You didn't see the trailers for that? I don't know how I ran.
How did you know? I never heard about this till right now.
This is a good question. I don't know. I was watching ABC at some point.
The Walendas?
they're like a circus family.
I'm like, did I miss a World Cup game or some sort?
Yeah, no,
that happened. What's going on?
Don't worry about that. I was watching ABC, and they had like an ad, like, hey, coming up this weekend. They apparently were in some big accident like 2 years ago where they all fell off of a top rope. And they broke a
and
couple of legs.
And they wanted to do it in Manhattan.
So now this is their, like, redemption tour. And I thought to myself, no. I don't know why, but there was nothing on TV last night. So I had it on for, like, 40 minutes. And it was the biggest waste of 40 minutes of my life. I didn't even end up actually watching.
Wait, so you don't know if they did it?
It was, like, a two-hour-long thing. And I didn't know. I mean, I should have known in the last 5 minutes.
2 hours for that crap?
Wire.
Oh, my God.
But it was this whole, like, song and dance about their redemption. And there was a lot of praying and stuff. They're very religious. But then you find out that they were harnessed in.
So if they fell, they didn't really fall.
Yeah, they just kind of
like. It's like, just hang there and wait, and we'll get you down.
I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
After like 30 minutes, I finally figured that out, and I thought, you know what? There's no chance they die. I'm out.
That's why I enjoyed that Free Solo movie so much. That dude put it on the line. He said,
I'm
climbing El Capitan, and if I fall, I'm dead. And they're going to the camera guys, and the camera goes, oh, yeah, I genuinely love him, and it's kind of weird. I'm filming him, and he falls. We're going to film him dying.
Right, like those are the stakes.
It gave me more anxiety. I'm like, I have to watch this guy get it.
And that's what I thought on the highway. I was like, man, this is intense. I was just in Manhattan. I was just in Times Square.
You would have been looking right
up. They were like 30 stories up. Like, man, if they fall, that's going to be nuts. And the last time they walked, they fell and then harnessed in. Oh, I'm out.
No, to answer your question, it was not the magical Walendas that I watched.
You did watch the Walendas?
Saturday, I had a buddy throw a raging party. He's got a really sick spread. His house is really nice, really big. And obviously, drinks were consumed. And I'd say a few drinks in. I wasn't really that drunk, but I knew that he's a hunter. He likes to go out and kill elk and deers and stuff.
He does more manly things than we
do. Oh, so many more manly things than I could ever do. And he also told me he had a bow and arrow. And I go, dude, can I shoot your arrow? And he goes, sure. And so he pulls the arrow out. He pulls his bow out. He has a target in his yard. We get these kids to run away and play somewhere else so I don't randomly shoot a kid.
You don't want kids playing underneath the arrow range.
What is your knowledge of bow and arrow?
I've shot a bow and arrow before. They're extremely difficult.
Dude, so you can
people don't
to
realize how much strength and toughness it takes. Like, it's like, I think it's the equivalent of pulling like 80 to 100 pounds of force back to cock the thing.
So I'm thinking like Cub Scouts, like bow and arrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Put it on the string, shoot it.
Yeah, you're in like Weeblos with the rubber thing on the end of it.
Dude, he pulled out a real arrow. He pulled out a bow, and it's camouflage. It's got laser target lineup things.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is an expensive ass.
They're intense, man.
And he's like, this little trigger alone was $180. And I'm like, oh, you can spend a lot of money because you make a lot. That's cool. And we all laughed. And he gives me the bow, and he goes, this is not going to be easy. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm just going to pull back and shoot. He goes, no, it's 75 pounds. And I go, what? He goes, the pressure is 75 pounds. I go, so what does that mean? He goes, when you pull it, you are pulling 75 pounds back.
Like imagine like a back rowing machine or whatever, and you got one hand and you're putting 75
hand,
pounds. Yeah.
So I'm holding it. Ends up being a group of like 12 people watching me do this because they all know I don't do this crap.
This is a lot of pressure.
They're filming me.
Don't shoot your foot.
Dude, I didn't work out. I went on a hike. That was it. I go to grab the bow. I pull it back. I can't get it.
Oh, no.
I go, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Dude, like I got to the point. They're like, keep going. Keep going, and it gets easy. You get to a point, and it loosens.
Yeah.
I try again. I get right to my cheek. Still not there. I can't go anymore back. I stop. I'm like, dude, what's going on? He's like, well, your technique's terrible.
You need to eat a couple of steaks.
He goes, you go to the gym all the time. I'm like, I'm not sitting there curling 185 pounds, bud. Yeah. He goes, use your two hands and do this. I couldn't do it. My technique, it looked like I was starting a lawnmower. You're supposed to start close to your face. You're supposed to use your other arm. I couldn't do it. he pulled it back for me with my arm on, like he was my dad.
Oh, God.
I shot it, went straight to the ground. We never found it. These other people take turns. People were hesitant. I was like, just do it. You can do it. They do it, all of them. Pull it back.
Oh, God.
And I'm standing there. I'm like, I know I'm stronger than that dude. I know I'm stronger than that dude, that dude. And they're doing it no problem. They weren't letting me live it down. I finally did it, like, after 20 minutes.
Yeah, your manhood is being questioned
dude,
right now.
It was so bad. I finally got it, lined it up, held it for about a minute, didn't aim right, shot it. Terrible shot.
Yeah, but at least you pulled back, you held, and you were able to release an arrow.
And then he goes, yeah, my brother's a way better shot, but he does, like, a 60-pound. And I go, well, why aren't you doing that? Because I know I could have done 60.
Where's the 45-pounder, all right?
He goes, well, one of my good friends is, he hunts with him. He does 90.
Yeah.
I go, for what?
Well, that you get more force on the shot.
Yeah, like, but,
so
man.
The more pullback that you have.
Like, I get that.
The more aggressive your arrow is going to
be. Sure. But his brother hunts for these deers or for these elks or whatever they are. He hunts with them with 60. So I know you can kill an animal with a 60-pound. What do you need a 75-pound? He goes, honestly, I only needed it so I could tell my brother is bigger than his.
Yeah, one of those.
And I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm out here looking stupid, getting made fun of by everybody because I can't pull a freaking bow back. But now I think I'm motivated. I think I'm getting into archery. The point of the story was to tell you, I think I'm going to go buy a bow.
You're going to get an arrow tattoo somewhere on your arm.
Oh, yeah, right here on the forearm, just the whole forearm.
You're going to be in your backyard firing arrows off on the weekend.
I really think I'm going to get into it,
This is your new thing.
Yeah,
huh?
I think it's my thing. I really enjoyed the challenge of doing it and the accomplishment feeling that I had doing it.
Now just put an animal on the other end and you complete the circle.
I don't think I can do all that. Yeah. I still don't know how people gut those things.
Those are, that's completely
different. I'm out. I don't want to pull guts out.
It's one thing to kill it. It's another thing then to do what you're supposed to do with it when you kill it. I don't, like, that might be one of the most badass things on the planet. The people who are that good at it, where they just hike in to some remote location with nothing but, like, a backpack and a bow and arrow.
And a sleeping bag, a backpack, and
they just walk around and then find, like, is that, because some hunting, like, we all know about, like, the African hunting sometimes where you go and they bring the animals into you.
Yeah.
Some fat guy that can't move, so he's got to have them corralled into a pen.
This giraffe, and they usually get backlash for it, but they're like, this giraffe is, like, actually killing other giraffes.
Yeah.
He can't mate anymore. He's super old.
Right.
And he's kind of a D. Can you just kill him?
Go take that one down for us,
and that's
please.
What people don't realize. They see these pictures and they're like, oh, that guy's a terrible human. Like, well, actually, that giraffe was destroying half of the giraffe population.
Well,
there's
different levels of hunting that I respect, and that kind of stuff is absolutely, it's incredible, man. It's incredible.
Yeah, so I'm an archer now.
Somebody texted in, Sprague, I got a raccoon problem at my house. Let's do this.
Dude, I'm in.
You could take out a raccoon with an arrow.
Well, I tried to shoot a bird. They were like, see that bird on the target?
I like that you can't take a target, and you went after a bird, huh?
Well, that one time I got it, they're like, hey, that bird on that target, you should get it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what kind of bird is that? He's like, I don't care, get it.
It's a crow, I don't care.
So I was aiming for it like this, let go. It went straight into the ground. It was a terrible shot. I wasn't remotely close.
The mighty almond hunter, Brandon Sprague.
Let's do it,
Let's
baby.
Let's go.
Let's go. Vegan hunter.
Yeah.
What kind of lifestyle would that be?
Can you shoot plants? Does that work? Can you go, like, what about, like a tree that has fruit? You can, like, shoot your fruit
shoot
off of
the fruit
tree.
Down? Yeah.
And bring it off with an arrow.
Dude, that's hilarious. All right. Let's find out what's on tap for today's show.
Bird and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on Tap brought to you to Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. We got a good show today. Dirt and I did not communicate about what to do on the show. So I have my show sheet set up, and I'm just assuming he has his section, and we're going to go from there.
Well, I did use one of my segments in the opening segment, the magical Walendas. I was saving that one for later.
Why did you do that?
I don't know.
I had a story for you.
I was all excited to talk about the Walendas last night.
God, you ruined a segment.
Did anybody else watch that? Tell me I wasn't alone.
Was it even good at all?
No.
Why'd you watch it for 40 minutes?
You know who hosted it?
Mario Lopez.
Michael Strahan and Aaron Andrews. And that's... Katie Nolan was doing, like, social media.
Oh, my gosh.
That guy, they must have gotten a lot of money to do this.
The magical Walendas.
All right. I'm probably going to start the show with a funny story I saw over the weekend, and I want to throw this to listeners that are out there about if you would do this or not. We will get to some audio. Nazir Little spoke today at his press conference. Joe says he's just like Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, not very talkative, but if he's the player that Kawhi Leonard is, I'm okay with it.
Why couldn't Chauncey Billups use that comp? Your guys are getting Kawhi Leonard, who fell to you at 25. Awesome, let's go. We'll get to that. We do have one stop to make at the Daily Ticker. Oh, my God, I just saw one of the worst tee shots I've ever seen in my life. This dude swung like it was a 90-mile-an-hour fastball coming down the middle.
I think we just found our beer a hole guy, and he is on the 16th hole. He's having a good time over there.
I'm jealous of everybody getting to golf today. Let's see. Yeah, we'll get to the Daily Ticker. I do want to ask the fun question because Rodman threw this out, and we didn't get to it on Friday. Would Michael Jordan average 50 points per game?
Oh, God. Sorry, it's your segment. Sorry.
We'll get to that. We need to talk about the New York Mets situation. It is ugly. The manager threatened a reporter, and then the pitcher threatened a reporter, and oh, my God, just a dumpster. Where's that listener that told me the Mets were going to be better than the Braves and contend?
Who told you that? Somebody
yeah, you don't remember this? I was talking about the NL East, and I said, Philly bolstered now with Harper. The Braves are going to be back. And some listener goes, how do you forget about the Mets? They traded. They got all these guys coming back. They got guys coming in that are vets. I was like,
the Mets.
Have you watched the Mets in, like, the last 30 years? They suck. So we'll get to the Mets situation. It's got some NFL stuff to get to as well. And maybe for those who just tuned in, maybe we will revisit the magical Willendas because Dirt watched this for some reason.
Somebody else. There has to be one other person on the planet that watched that because it was on for 2 hours on ABC.
Well, I need to know, one, how do you stretch that show for 2 hours? And two, what do you get out of watching that show? I really want to know that. So the Better You Today text line is 555-305. We are live out here at Langdon Farms for the 7th annual Fan Golf Classic. Just a beautiful setup once again. And we're having a good time and some good weather. All right, coming up next, we'll start the show here. If a pro athlete offered you $1,500 to switch seats on an airplane, would you do it? Because I need to commend this sports fan who said no thank you. If you didn't see the story, we'll give you all the details. We'll start there. Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
Listening to Dirt and Spray as Cooney Lexus of Portland presents the 7th Annual Fan Golf Classic at Langdon Farms Golf Club. Brought to you by Pelican Brewing, Stark Street Lawn and Garden, by Washman Car Wash, Rebel Yell Bourbon, and by Big Fat Wieners. Dirt and Spray on 1080 The Fan.
Can I just say real quick how much I greatly appreciate and the fan appreciates all the wonderful partners along with Langdon Farms hosting this yet again, that have teamed up with us to put on the 7th Annual Fan Golf Classic. Without all of them, it wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, they make this event go every year, man.
So I'm going to allow Vic to be the guy that names them every time because I don't want to leave one out.
We'll name them almost every commercial break, I'm sure.
Right, coming back. So just thank you to all the partners and sponsors out there. We greatly appreciate you guys tremendously.
The guy you need to look up, and I'm glad a listener texted this in. By the way, people are having fun with you turning into a bow hunter. This is now a thing.
I didn't say I was actually going to hunt.
This is the newest, as people and Gus pointed out, you driving a motorcycle. This is the new motorcycle
trend.
Ooh,
you think it's on that level?
Maybe not quite.
I think this is more realistic than the motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, just but you,
right because the motorcycle.
Do
I
you
know
realize
how
expensive these things are? First off,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay, yeah, they're expensive. Yeah.
I've already been looking online.
The guy, the guy you got to look up because I listened to this on my way back from a bachelor party a couple of months ago from Ben.
Yeah,
and we were looking just for something to pass the time with, and a buddy of mine said, "Well, let's listen to this Rogan podcast." Cameron Haynes.
He lives in Eugene.
He lives in Eugene.
He works for the city of Eugene. He's like a really well-known bow hunter.
Yes.
That's what he's known
for. He's intense. And have you heard his stories about running?
Yeah, yeah.
He does like 500-mile races.
He's like an ultra marathoner.
Like without stopping. Like he sleeps for 15 minutes and then runs another 100 miles.
Yeah. I don't listen to every Rogan episode, not for any particular reason, but I don't subscribe to any podcasts. I'll just check him out once in a while. And he is one of my favorite guests that he'll have on. And then when I found out he was in Eugene, I was like, oh, that's badass, dude. I want to be that guy.
Yeah. This is your new spirit.
Except I don't want to run 500 miles. That doesn't sound fun.
No, that sounds stupid. But, hey, more power to you, I guess, if you're capable of running 500 miles.
Have you ever done the Piddick Mansion hike?
No, I've never done that.
So the wife and I did that on Saturday. We didn't have the kids, and so we just went, let's go for a hike. The weather was perfect. And there was a guy that ran past us twice, up and then back, and the back of his shirt said, get out of the way, I'm a 50K runner.
And get out of the way.
Yeah.
I'm a 50K runner.
And he calls himself an ultra marathoner. And I was like, damn, that's cool. Like, I wouldn't want to go that far, but that's really cool that people do that.
Yeah, the bragging point. That's like the people who put the sticker on the car. What is it? Isn't it like
26.2?
You see those stickers on the car?
I'm happy for people that do any form of exercise. But the ones that I don't quite get, and I don't want to diminish their ability to do this because I'm proud of them, I don't get the 13.1 people. Like, 13 miles is a legit accomplishment. But did you need to put that sticker on your car? You ran a half marathon.
Why can't I have some of these in my life? Can I get one that's like, adequate golfer? Like, just a bumper sticker?
Seven handicap.
Yeah, good drinker. Decent barbecuer. Like, why don't I have these things in my life? You guys have cool – runners have cool things they can put on the back of their car.
First time home buyer.
Yeah, that's right. I own this car.
Right. Shout out, by the way, one of our P1s. We've met a couple of them. You guys are the best. P1 Alex dropped by with a nice bottle over here.
Yeah.
Took a
yeah.
shot with him, and the boys are out there golfing now. Hit them straight.
It's going to be a good show.
Okay. I want to start with a very chill segment, and then we're going to go into the Daily Ticker. We got one stop to make. I want to start with Cam Newton was on an airplane. I saw this over the weekend. Cam Newton's on an airplane.
And guess what he's wearing?
He's wearing like a real
post-game, post-game kind of attire.
You know, Cam Newton is Cam Newton.
Exactly what you would think he's wearing.
I don't think Cam Newton post-game is different than Cam Newton not at a post-game.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's just who he is.
So he's on this airplane, and he's riding just not private jet, regular jet. And he wants to switch to an exit row because he needs leg room. And you know, he's 6'5", dude, big guy. He goes over to this gentleman because he has like a seat in front of him and he can't do that leg room. He's too tall. So he goes over to this gentleman and somebody films it. He offered the guy $1,500 for this guy to get up, give Cam Newton the seat, and sit 10 feet away in another seat.
Yes.
Now, we don't know the duration of the flight. It looked like a 3-row flight, so that might be a cross-country trek from Charlotte to L.A. or something. Who knows?
Because that was my initial question.
Right.
How long is the flight?
And it looked like the airline's pretty big, so my thinking is it's a cross-country flight. The gentleman said no. He tried two times. He goes, $1,500?
Yeah, he was genuinely shocked that the guy turned the
Couldn't
money
believe
down.
It. He walked back, and the filming stops when Cam Newton sits in his seat. Cam looks obviously a little ticked, like, damn, $1,500 and get a guy to move? The guy said no to this. Now, I get a 5-6 hour flight is a long time. I don't even care who you are. If you offer me $1,500 to switch seats, I'm out. Give me the cash, please.
What if you have $100,000 in your bank account?
Don't care.
Really?
Bro, it's $1,500.
If
I have $100,000 in my bank account, I care about money.
And if I have that kind of money in my account, there's a reason I bought that ticket to have the leg room because comfort is important to me. And not everybody.
Well, don't you just get lucky with that? Do you really?
Well, no, usually with the
you
seats,
actually get to pick exit row?
Yeah. On my latest flight, if you want to buy certain rows that have – I mean, there's obviously first class, which, by the way, why is Cam Newton not flying first class? So that was my
I thought
initial,
that was first class.
No, because all first class seats have the same amount of leg room, so he wouldn't be trying to switch
great,
from one seat
like
to another.
That looks like business class then.
Yeah,
huh?
He's in like the second tier on the airplane.
Right.
Which is on you, Cam. You got to buy a better seat than that if you have all that money.
There are reports saying that he missed his original first class flight.
Okay.
That's why he had to take coach in this one.
That would make sense now.
And people are saying, by the way, and this again backs up why you don't sell that seat, it's a 10-hour flight to Paris.
Oh, is that where they were flying?
Did we find out where he was flying? To Paris.
Okay. So thank you for the listeners. I didn't see where they were flying. I'm telling you, man,
if you have a certain number, like, you give me $1,500 right now, I'll be uncomfortable for 10 hours. Like, what the hell? Like, that's a decent hourly rate. I'll take that. But if you give me a complete financial backing in my life, like, I am perfectly fine. I don't need money. Everything's paid off. Absolutely not am I giving up 10 hours of comfort for $1,500.
Look. I don't have money, so it's easier for me to say yes to this in this hypothetical world. But I think still given knowing who I am, if I'm flying to Paris and I have that kind of money to have that seat. Obviously, I'm doing okay, and my vacation's already planned out and probably going to be pretty awesome, right? But then I get to tell myself, I get an extra $1,500 to spend.
And you get to go sit in the middle.
Whatever.
In a crowded plane.
But
I just had to do that from 6 hours from New York to Portland, or Portland to New York
and sucks.
Philly. It sucks.
Yeah,
man.
I bet it sucks a lot.
You're sitting upright. There's no leg room. The person in front of you leans back.
Now, here's the idea.
Flying
right.
is awful.
Here's how I would say no, though. I'll give you the one scenario. It looked like he was sitting next to somebody he knew, and it looked like Cam was going alone.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see his wife or his kid, and if he did have him, was he cool just going, hey, you guys stay here.
No
I need this leg room. I want to sit over there.
Yeah, there's no way.
Right, so he was probably alone. If my wife's with me, I'd have to negotiate. She has to go where I sit because it's a long flight. We're going to want to talk. But if that can't happen, Cam Newton's like, I'll sit next to your wife. I'm like, first of all, I know my wife. And her crush is Pharrell Williams. There's a good chance that you're going to steal her from me.
Yeah, and you're going to Paris, too.
And you're going to Paris. You're Cam Newton. Yeah.
Your wife is spending her Paris vacation with Cam Newton.
How do you say no in French?
No.
No. That's what I say. Hey, Cam, in French, no.
Yeah, it was funny to me. Like, Stuke even tweeted this out today. It was funny. Like, his look of genuine, like, he was just dumbfounded.
Dirt, that's a lot of money to almost anybody.
Not almost anybody, though. Like, think about the number
of
people
in the country.
Sure, I get that. But if you have that seat, it looked like it was a seat that you pay more for. So
sure.
The person had the money to buy that ticket initially.
How do we know the $1,500 wasn't? Not only did he offer him enough to break even, but he offered him $1,500 up.
Oh, for sure. The $1,500 was probably more than what Cam Newton would have to pay for a business class or whatever normal seat on an airplane.
Yeah.
I think if you would have gone in like the $5,000 range, like, hey, I'll give you $5,000 for that seat.
What about $2,500?
And that even changes. That's an extra $1,000.
$2,000?
No, $2,000. You
get, so 25 is your base limit.
$2,500 is the base limit.
Right,
I think.
Right. Yeah.
A 10-hour flight, man.
I know, man. But I'm, I don't know. That's $1,500 to just sit in a different seat.
I'd rather pay to be comfortable.
You got little legs, though. And I'm coming from a guy with long legs.
Doesn't matter, right? My knees still touch the seat in front of me, okay? That height joke out of here.
I'm sorry. All right, yeah, I just want to start the show there. I saw that. I thought about it for a while during the weekend. Cam Newton offers $1,500. Guy says, nah, piss off. Cam Newton has to go back to his seat with no leg room. All right, coming up next, we got the Daily Ticker. We have one stop to make. It's in L.A. The billboards are up now. Free agency period is Sunday. It opens on Sunday. Oh, my Lord, Dirt. We have already got the recruiting going. We'll talk with Andrew Greif of the LA Times. He covers the Clippers. Obviously, their big pursuit of Kawhi Leonard. Andrew Greif will join us next for the Daily Ticker. But first, Joe with a sports update.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, one stop to make, Daily Ticker time here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Dirt and Sprague hanging out for the 7th Annual Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farms. And I saw two billboards in L.A. go up this week. And, of course, the Clippers cannot say that they were responsible for them because that would be illegal. But free agency period is upon us starting this week. And I thought, you know what, let's bring on friend of the show, Andrew Greif, who is now down in L.A. for the L.A. Times covering the Los Angeles Clippers. He's on Twitter at Andrew Greif. And he joins us now. Andrew, thanks for the time here in Portland, man. I'll just start here. I saw that press conference with Lawrence Frank the other night, and I'm sure you were there, at least saw the video. He seemed like one of those guys where he's going to be a little concerned if they can't get Kawhi to sign this summer. What do you think about that?
I think that, obviously, if they can't sign Kawhi, it's going to be a big blow because, you know, they prioritized him for probably the last year, ever since the trade from San Antonio. I mean, it's been something that this organization has really made kind of a keystone of their offseason plan. So if they don't sign him, obviously that is a big blow to their ambitions to be contenders really, really soon. You know, if they want to be long-term contenders, that's the whole goal behind Steve Ballmer and Lawrence Frank and the way they've reorganized the front office 2 years ago, since the last time they reorganized 2 years ago. But, you know, signing Kawhi means you're a contender right now. So that would be obviously a huge bummer for all the planning they've put into it. But I don't think that if they didn't sign him, that it would lead them to have a knee-jerk reaction to try to sign somebody else. They're going to have a ton of cap space, but this is a really disciplined kind of management team. And so I think that if you don't see them sign Kawhi, if he goes back to Toronto or wherever he goes, if it's not L.A., you're not going to see the Clippers panic and throw a bunch of money at D'Angelo Russell or something like that.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because that was my next question is oftentimes we see teams not know what to do when they have all that money. Portland's still paying for it, as a lot of other teams are from 2016. They had money to spend. They got tied up in bad contracts. And here we are a number of years later, and they still haven't gotten out of them. So your kind of intellect is saying that if they don't get Kawhi Leonard, you just kind of maybe wait it out, and if nobody else on the market comes, you just wait till next offseason? Like, where does the game plan go from there?
I think that they would try to sign some guys. I think that, veteran guys who can play some defense and shoot some threes, I think that's probably a target. But I think that even if they go after those guys, the game plan is most likely short-term deals, maybe two-year deals. Maybe they pay a little bit more of a premium for it because, you know, say the player X has a three-year offer somewhere else. Well, the Clippers might say, we'll give you two, we'll bump up the salary a little bit. I think you could see that being the next route they would take because, like you said, the summer of 2016 is really haunting a lot of teams when all that cap space came into play in the NBA. You mentioned it right there with the Blazers. I don't think that they want to be that team that in 3 or 4 years says, why are we paying all this money to this guy? You know, I think that's to me is why Al Horford doesn't make a lot of sense for the Clippers. Not that he is not a great player, but if the reported idea for him to get a four-year deal, maybe north of $100 million, if that's really true, I just don't know how that meshes with the Clippers who want to be, you know, financially flexible and nimble in the next couple of years.
Right. Andrew Greif is our guest, LA Times, covering the Clippers. The Clippers, obviously, in the pursuit of Kawhi Leonard to get him out of Toronto after winning a title. He is an unrestricted free agent. Billboards going up. Did we find out who put up the billboards? I know the Clippers obviously have to come out and say, look, we didn't do that. Do we know where that came from?
No. No one has messaged me saying I'm the responsible party. Right now I am on the billboard beat, but I don't know who did that. Probably just a fan. Who knows? But it definitely has caused a lot of stir down here. Kind of like, I forget when, maybe 2013 when Dwight Howard, someone put up, I think, Stay Dwight billboards. And so I've seen a lot of Lakers fans in my mentions saying, this time it wasn't us. So it's apparently it's a popular thing to do down here.
Well, and we just saw the impact that Kawhi Leonard could have on a team winning a title in Toronto, a good team, but a team that couldn't quite get over the hump in the Eastern Conference, wins them a championship. If you put Kawhi Leonard, let's say he ends up choosing L.A. and goes to the Clippers to play, granted there would probably be some other moves, but what does that immediately do to their roster in terms of contention in a Western Conference that right now looks to be wide open next year?
Well, it immediately makes them one of probably the top three favorites in the West. I think the Lakers are up there. Obviously, even though they don't have much of a team beyond LeBron and AD, that's still a really good twosome, clearly, as an understatement. So I think the Clippers would join the Lakers as probably two of the top favorites immediately, and that's before they would do anything else. And the Clippers, I think that the reason why they feel like they could be immediate contenders, I don't think it's wrong to laugh that off at all, because a lot of the pieces that made them an overachieving 8 seed last year, kind of that gritty team that a lot of teams didn't want to play, those guys are coming back. Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Landry Shamet, Danilo Gallinari potentially if he's not traded or moved. Those guys are a really nice kind of core. Those guys can win you a lot of games by themselves. And then you add Kawhi to that, and it's kind of like a ready-made group because – the Clippers got a lot of playoff experience this year against, you know, a healthy Golden State team. That's really valuable. So you pair that with an NBA Finals MVP, and you can kind of understand why the Clippers really want this to happen.
Yeah, Andrew Greif, LA Times, is our guest covering the Clippers here on the Daily Ticker. You know, that move to get Doc kind of out of the front office stuff and really just – honing in on the coaching aspect, I mean, that paid such dividends for them. I thought this was his best. I know he's won a championship, and he had some good teams with CP and Blake. I thought this was his best coaching job easily. of any year of his career. He did such an exceptional job with that roster and with those role guys to come together and even push the Warriors to six games in the first round. What went into that decision-making? How hard do you think that was for Doc to kind of give up and just say, okay, I'm just going to coach? And, man, the world of difference it seems to be making with how we view the Clippers versus them kind of being what they were for so long, a laughingstock in the NBA.
Yeah, you're right. That was a really pivotal moment. Obviously, before I joined the beat by about a year, but you hear Doc talk about it this year, and it was completely what was necessary because right now he's free to be a coach. And a lot of people will tell you that he is one of the better coaches in the NBA. The way he relates to players, the way he can get guys to accept roles and communicates with them. Lou Williams said that he has been one of the favorite coaches ever played for that reason. He just kind of has a respect to the guys, and it's hard to do those two jobs at once. So even though in the moment, you clearly know Doc did not want to be demoted, he would say now that it was the best thing that could have happened to him. And what by installing Lawrence Frank as his successor, it's created this really unique partnership because Lawrence is a former head coach with New Jersey Nets, Detroit Pistons. Doc has done the president role. They've both done each other's jobs, you know, so they can both relate to each other. Doc knows what it's like to trade someone or go through free agency. Lawrence knows what it's like to put together a game plan. So I think there's a lot of mutual respect because both of the guys have been in their shoes before. And so you see a lot of those guys. I think after every game, I probably see when Lawrence is there, I see him and Doc talking for 5-10 minutes, just going over what happened in the game. They can kind of speak a language that maybe a career executive can't with a head coach. So that's that is a really big selling point that a lot of the front office guys say is very unusual and in different places across the NBA.
No doubt about it. Get you out of here on this one, Andrew. What does your gut say? I know nobody has any read. I think Chris Haynes might be the closest one because he talked to Kawhi's uncle. But he's a tough guy to read. We know he has that house that he bought last year in the San Diego area. It's beautiful. We know, obviously, the LA Ties just won a title, though, in Toronto. What's your gut say right now? If you had to make a bet today, do you think he is a Clipper?
That point you made about no one not knowing anything, that's legitimate. Like, no one knows anything. I mean, you talk to people around the league, people do not know. I mean, Kawhi keeps in an extremely tight circle, and beyond that group, no one knows right now. I think he might leave because I think that the window, Toronto clearly has won, and you have to think, well, shoot, they could probably win again or at least have a good shot at it. I wonder if that team, if he looks at it and says, even if he signs a 1+1 deal, I wonder if it might be getting a little too old. Has the window closed at all? You know, the East is probably going to be better than the West next year, at least top heavier. So I wonder if he wonders, you know, could I go into that ready-made Clippers group where there's comforts of home and there's a team ready to win right now? I wonder if he sees that as potentially the better chance to win. As odd as that sounds, considering the Raptors just lifted the title like 2 weeks ago, I kind of wonder if he thinks the East might be a little more rugged next year and maybe the Clippers can do it again.
Right. There we go. Great stuff. Great insight. Andrew Greif, LA Times. Find his work, obviously, at latimes.com and on Twitter at Andrew Greif. Andrew, thanks so much for the time, man. We always appreciate we can get you back on the station up here in little old Portland, Oregon. Stay in contact with us little folks, and I'm sure we'll catch up with you this summer, depending on what goes on.
I'm glad to be back on the airwaves in the Northwest. A little piece of me is back home right now, even if it's not really physically. So I appreciate that, fellas.
Absolutely. There we go. Good stuff. Andrew Greif, LA Times on the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard. His gut says he thinks he is going to leave. And, you know, his reasoning's great. The East is going to be tough. I know Toronto did just win the title, but they could have been a bad bounce in Game 7 away from losing in the second round. The West is wide open, which is what we continue to talk about from the Portland perspective.
Well, the interesting part about the East, though, too, is I think right now you would bet that it's going to be tough, especially at the top. But right, you look at Boston, they're losing Kyrie Irving. We know that. Al Horford's going to be gone. You can try and argue that they're better without those guys, but that's still time will tell. Can they consistently be as good without Kyrie Irving and Al Horford? You look at Philadelphia, who's losing Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris, and what do they do in free agency if both those guys walk and don't end up re-signing? Milwaukee's a team who could lose Middleton because he's going to get a big-time contract offer somewhere else, potentially, and maybe they don't want to match it, and they're in a real tough financial spot because the Giannis extension is going to kick in next year. So Like, we don't know what free agents are going to move to the East, and Kevin Durant might be one of them in 2 years, and Kyrie might move to another Eastern team. So there's that unknown factor. But as of right now, Toronto proved they could beat those teams last year, and none of them are going to be, in my opinion, better than they were this past year in Milwaukee, Philly, or Boston. So he's got to have a lot of confidence staying in Toronto, too.
All right, we're way over here on the Daily Ticker. Coming up next, I have a couple more NBA thoughts, and then I want to ask a question at the top of the 1 o'clock hour. We got a lot more to get to. Dirt and Sprague hanging out live at Langdon Farms for the 7th Annual Fan Golf Classic. The Big Fat Wiener Truck has a long line. We've got people under here eating lunch as well. Festivities have kicked off. Everybody's on the course or getting ready to be having a good time. We're back with more on 1080 The Fan.
You're listening to Dirt and Sprague as Cooney Lexus of Portland presents the 7th Annual Fan Golf Classic at Langdon Farms Golf Club. Brought to you by Encore Audio Video, Warren Allen Attorneys at Law, United Cerebral Palsy of Oregon, by Vicasa, The Children's Course, and by 808. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:50 on The Fan. Welcome back into the Sports Leader here in the beautiful city of Portland. Hope you guys are enjoying your Monday afternoon. You know, I was thinking about the Kawhi stuff during that interview with Greif, Dirt, and yesterday I was kind of just hanging out. The wife wanted to go see one of our friends' newborns, and so I was just watching the kids hanging out, relaxing a little bit, and I got on Twitter, and I had seen something, not to rehash the whole should we or should we not thing, but I saw the Kevin Love stuff again, the Portland and Kevin Love stuff, because Channing Frye tweeted, hey, after talking with some buddies, because Channing Frye is now back in Portland, he lives here. And he's like, after talking with some buddies, I think it's a smart move and the move to make.
We got breaking news.
Holy moly. What do we got?
Hit it, Joe. Hit it, Joe.
Oh!
Hit me, Joe.
Oh, man. Portland made a move.
Hit me, Joe.
I don't
know. No, Joe.
No,
Joe. We don't have
Joe.
Breaking news.
Thanks, Joe.
We don't have good breaking news sound.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Joe. Read it, my man. What is it?
The Portland Trail Blazers. Yes, your Portland Trail Blazers have traded Evan Turner to Atlanta for Kent Bazemore.
Kent Bazemore.
Kent Bazemore.
I'm looking up his contract because I don't care about his numbers because I know what
that,
he does.
That was a 2016 contract as well, so it probably will not be as
– So mean, this year, no, it's a 1 year. He's going to be basically a one and done. He is $19.2 million cap hit for Kent Bazemore, and then after this season he is an unrestricted free agent. Depending on how he can play, he may stay maybe for – a different deal, or maybe he goes elsewhere. But he signed a 4-year, $70 million deal with the Hawks with an average salary of $17.5. Obviously, at the end of the contracts is when it kicks up the most. So Kent Bazemore is now a Blazer at $19.5 million. No longer Evan Turner. We've just gotten some more shooting.
I love this move. I love this move.
I don't know how you don't.
The Evan Turner move, it never fit. It never worked out. There were moments where he had a couple of bright spots, and he came up big in Game 7 against Denver, and you give him credit for that.
Thank you a lot for that, by the way.
Sure.
He was big in that
series.
That
was huge, and you want to make sure to give him the recognition he deserves there because he did have a big series and a big game against Denver in that moment. But it just was never the right fit. Him, Dame, and CJ, they wanted him to be the point forward ball handler, or they wanted him to run the second unit. It never quite worked out, and I think this is a move that is good for both sides involved. Atlanta didn't have a need for Kent Bazemore anymore. You're essentially swapping two contracts that weren't great on either team's books. And you're getting a guy that averaged just shy of 12 points per game last year. Shot 32% from three, so I know that's great, but the year not great. But the year before, he was 39% from three. So he's a guy that at times can shoot the ball a lot better from the outside. I think he gives you more of a scoring impact. Maybe somebody that you can slot in as a starting small forward if you need to. He's 6'5", 201. You can play him as a bigger two if you need to as well. He's a better player than Evan Turner. He's a better fit than Evan Turner. And this is a great trade for Portland.
Yeah, I think this is – I'm tweeting it out right now, which is stupid because I'm doing a radio show. But I was just thinking, you know, Neil, addressing an obvious need for the team while also freeing yourself up financially. Because, look, I know you're basically trading an expiring for an expiring, so it's 1 year left. But it's just good to know you're going to have somebody better suited for your roster need, and they only have one more year on their contract, and then you free up yourself financially. I think this is a good deal. This is something that's been rumored for 2 years now. This isn't like groundbreaking that Kent Bazemore is in the Portland discussion.
No, yeah, his name has been mentioned with Portland for a couple of years now.
But it's nice to see Neil clearly has been sitting there on the phone going, hey, you know, thank you, Evan, for everything you did in the playoffs, but this was not a great fit.
Yeah.
I think Evan loved his time in Portland. I think everybody's pretty nice to him on the streets and obviously made some friends with some of the guys here. But I think this was absolutely the move you had to make. And I like this fit. This was a no-brainer deal.
Yeah, and I think, look, we've all been kind of wondering when a big move's going to come and is that move out there to be made. Time's going to tell on that. We don't know. And this isn't the trade that's going to put Portland over the top. But what it does is it makes you incrementally better. And I think what I like about it is, one, it finally acknowledging that the Evan Turner fit didn't work and not making us go through that again for another year as fans. So I appreciate that.
I think he's
that.
Been trying to trade that since last
sure.
year. I don't think anybody wanted to bite on that.
He hasn't been able to find it. And now you see that there is a little incentive out there for expiring deals. Granted, these are both expiring, but
yeah.
you can get rid of them for something of value in return.
But I think Bazemore wasn't going to play as much with this. I think
sure,
they want this
Atlanta's,
young team
yeah.
to go out there and right. just ball out and get the experience.
Right, and Bazemore maybe was standing in the way of somebody. But just I like it, though, too, because I think it signals that you're going to be active and busy this offseason. And so far, you didn't end up trading the first-round pick. You took Nasir Little, and we'll hear from him a little bit later. But we all kind of appreciated and agreed that was the right call and the right guy to take at the end of the first round. And now you make this move, and who knows if there's more to come. But at least as of so far, you've been active, and you've already found ways to improve the roster going into next year.
Right. I saw this one from John Schumann, who's a stats guy for NBA.com. He said, the Hawks forest high-paid players now next season. Get this. Evan Turner. Alan Crabb. Remember, he got traded. Solomon Hill and Miles Plumlee.
Yeah.
Talk about the dumping ground for an NBA team. Hey, we got young guys on the cheap. We have to reach the salary floor. Send us your bad contracts.
Right.
We'll take them. We don't really care. They're not going to play all that much anyway.
Yeah, we'll take all of them. The Kent Bazemore that you want to see in Portland is the Kent Bazemore from 2 years ago.
Yes.
If you were able to get – so, I mean, last year, as I mentioned, he was 11.5 points per game, 32% from three, and 40% from the floor. So I know that's not great. He played 67 games, started 35, played about 24 minutes per game. But if you get the Bazemore from the year before where he averaged 13 a game, about 3.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, so he's a guy that can help you in other ways as well. He's not a terrible defender, and he shot 39% from three. I mean, if you're able to get that, whether it's in the starting lineup as your starting three or it's coming off the bench as a little scoring production, you get a guy that's able to shoot close to 39%. And really for the chunk of his Atlanta career, he's been higher than 35%. He was 36, just under 35, 39, and then last year dipped a little bit.
He had a down year, but I think he wanted
down
out.
Down to 32. It wasn't the right fit. They're going in a different direction, so things have changed for him in Atlanta. If you get that 39% from three, man, that's a huge need that Portland has right now.
One area that I would point to that I think people are going to care about is games. You know, how many games did you play? I'll date this back to 14-15. Because before that, he started with Golden State in 2012. He played 61 games, 67, and then he went to L.A. 23. That was the same year. It was a trade? I think it was a trade. I look back. And then it's 75, 75, 73, 65, 67. Also a guy with good durability. And that's important, too, because that's the one huge knock on the Kevin Love stuff is people going, oh, well, Kevin Love didn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not married to this Kevin Love idea. I like the risk that they would take to do it. But when you bring in Kent Bazemore and you tell me that Kent Bazemore is averaging around 71 games per season, I am 100% in on that idea and what he potentially could bring to the roster with Dame and CJ now that Evan Turner's been traded. So if you're just tuning in, Kent Bazemore traded from the Atlanta Hawks to the Portland Trail Blazers for Evan Turner. And both players have 1 year on their deal. Atlanta's kind of been a dumping ground anyway and taking on a lot of contracts that people would classify as bad. We'll have more on this. Your thoughts at the Bet You Today text line at 55305. I'll try to work some magic and see if I can get us a guest to maybe just give her general thoughts on this, or maybe we do that tomorrow. Although tomorrow's show usually ends up being us half drunk on the show, not organized, not ready. And
yeah, day two is always a little sloppy.
Day two is always the tougher one. So I'll try to work on this during the break. We have a lot more to get to in the second hour. I want to talk about the Zion Williamson lawsuit that's going on. That one's pretty crazy. A lot more to get to. Stick with us. Dirt and Sprague hanging out at the 7th Annual Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farms. We're back with more. Hour two straight ahead on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.